would you say is the number one disagreement man has with God? I prefer the word argument because man gets hot under the collar about what God says and may spend the rest of his life taking strong issue with God on what he says. And he will spend that time arguing with God or arguing with those who state the attitude of God, trying to prove God is wrong. Now, what is it that God says that man so hotly contests? Psalms 53, verse 2 and 3. God looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if he could find any there that did understand and that did seek God. His conclusion, verse 3, is what man hotly contests. Every one of them is gone back. They are every one become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Now, such a statement is an insult to the minds of most, especially in their case. They say that verse just isn't true. When God looked down from heaven, he just overlooked me. Now, only does man maintain a positive attitude, he also maintains a very high opinion of himself. Proverbs 30, verse 12. There is a generation, and I might say it's every generation. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes, good, and yet have not been washed from their filthiness. Pure here, this simply means defiled. To that person, they would say, there's something wrong with God's eyesight. I'm not defiled. I'm having trouble with my voice again. I was doing better, but doing worse right now. But from his viewpoint, as he looks at himself, he says, I'm more considerate than inconsiderate. I'm more faithful than unfaithful. I'm more charming than repulsive. I'm more moral than immoral. I'm more good than bad. So therefore, it's not fair to say I'm defiled. It's not fair to say, no, there's not one good person on the face of the earth. Actually, man says, I deserve applause. I deserve a good conduct medal. I deserve a good neighbor medal. I deserve a good wife or husband medal. A good employee medal, whatever you want to call it. I'm good. I'm not bad. So God has said this. God's not telling the truth. And God's judgment is unfair. It is untrue. And so I take issue with God. Folks, that is the number one argument man has with God. Now they say, I'm not perfect. I'll agree to that. But again, what bad there is in me does not qualify me to rank with the term bad. I should still be classified good, although I have a little bad in my life. I'm not perfect, but I'm sure not bad. To them, bad means filthy, criminal, scum. And so therefore they argue, don't put me in that category. I'm not bad. Now man stresses or senses the importance of winning this argument. Now there are some arguments that you might get involved in, and whether you win or lose, it doesn't make much difference one way or the other. I think most arguments are like that. What are you arguing for? Who cares? Whether you win or lose. In this argument, man realizes, I must win. Why? Because it's his ticket into paradise. It's going to be used by him as the only sole basis for his acceptance into heaven. Most folks you meet are counting on their personal goodness to get them to heaven. And I have preached this for 20-some years, even in this church, and still hear members in this church talk this way. It seems man is going to argue this right down to the pearly gates and going to stand right there at the pearly gates and give his biggest argument right in God's face. I'll tell you, I deserve to be in heaven and I don't deserve to be lost. I'm good. It's the number one argument people have with God. You go to a funeral and almost invariably, every time, a preacher will say, they're good. That's not what God says. And there's where the argument comes. And though God may argue, there's none good, no, not one, each man in his own mind says, I don't deserve that rating. I don't deserve that. I'm an exception to the rule. And really, you talk to people and tell them this, and they'll take it as a personal insult, and they'll turn on you, even if all you're doing is telling them what God has declared in His Word. And this argument rages on from one generation to the next. The children pick it up and go right on with it. And God stands by His argument, and man stands by his argument, and man really believes when it gets to the showdown, God will admit he was wrong and that he deserves to be entered into heaven because he was good. What man doesn't understand is that he's arguing the wrong question. So far, I've been asking, what is the number one argument man has with God? All right? I want to reverse it. What's the number one argument God has with man? Let's reverse the whole situation. Here it is. Now listen to me. God's first argument with man is not that he's bad, but that he is dead. You follow me? God's first argument with man is not that he is bad, but that he is dead. And that brings us to our object for today. Jesus was talking to the scribes and the Pharisees, and he makes a comment I want us to read in Matthew 23:27. When God presents this argument, man has no answer for him. Man's arguing the wrong question. Now, in verse 27, chapter 23 of Matthew, Jesus says, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites! if there was anybody ever lived who claimed to be good, it was Pharisees and scribes. I mean, they were the jewels of people who argued with God they were good people. Jesus says, "You hypocrites." Now notice our object. "For you are like unto white sepulchres," that's my object, whitewashed tombs. "You are like white sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful on the outside, but within it is full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear." Now notice, you on the outside look good. "You appear righteous unto men, but within you are full of hypocrisy and iniquity." Whitewashed tomb. They would whitewash it. They put white paint on it. That was kind of an identifying thing, but it was also a way of garnishing or decorating it. And oftentimes, depending on your financial means, you would even have a little garden placed around the tomb where you would grow flowers and keep it free of weeds. I mean, you would keep the outside looking real attractive. You'd put a lot of labor into it. Now, the outside of the sepulcher would be comparable to a man's boastings of being good. In other words, there was much on the outside, and there is much on the outside, that to us says deserves the award of excellence. There is on the outside evidence of such beautiful handiwork, such beautiful deeds, such outstanding works, such wonderful contributions to mankind, such magnificent activities of kindness, such splendid generosity, such supreme sacrifices, such commendable honesty, such tender-hearted compassion. All these things are appearing outside in the garden. You've worked hard on these things, and they look good, and people award you and compliment you and praise you. How wonderful the outside of the garden looks. And that's what David's arguing. Outside, brother, I'm good. I don't question that, folks. Some of you, I don't say you, but some of the folks you talk to, their gardens are splendid, beautiful, lovely. Pin award on them. They're good. And we could go on and on with this list of commendations that man heaps upon himself. And everything does look good. All right? But you know what? That's not the problem. And what you're doing on the outside is no solution to the problem. What's the problem? Well, all the goodness and the things that we have planted in our lives that are good in the garden seemingly have overgrown and covered up the whitewashed sepulcher, the whitewashed tomb. And man doesn't even see or know it even exists. Say Jesus came into your garden, and you felt compelled to impress upon him how good you have been, how much good work you have done, and shall you show him the whole list of everything that you have done. Look how beautiful my life is. Look how much I have done to make a garden out of my surroundings. And you point out one good deed after another good deed that you have done. And Jesus walks over to this wall, and he pushes back some of those lovely flowers that you have grown in life. And he says, "What's this?" And you say, "Well, it's the wall that I have painted white." And Jesus says, "What's inside?" "I see there's a door here. And what's inside?" Oh, I don't worry about that. I just paint it white and make it look good. I don't go inside. Let's go inside. Oh, no. No, I don't want to go inside. Why not? There may be some treasure in there, some gold, some silver. What's inside there? No, I don't want to go in there. Let's go back out of the garden. I got some more peonies I want to show you. No, let's go inside. Your garden. You've surrounded your whole garden tomb with flowers. Let's go inside and see what's in there. Come on. And so Jesus rolls the stone away. And he says, come inside with me. And he walks inside and says to the man, what do you see? And the guy holds his nose. I see dead bones. I see defilement all over this place. It stinks. Let's close the door. And Jesus says, wait a minute. Don't you want to know who that is? Yeah, who is it? It's you. It's you. Sir, the problem is not how good the garden looks. The question is how dead the skeleton is. My first argument with you is not your good works, but my first argument is not that you're bad, but that you're dead. Dead. Look, dead. Now tell me, sir, how are you going to raise those dead bones of your soul and your spirit? How are you going to raise them? How are you going to get inside this tomb and put flesh back on those old bones? How are you going to resurrect and raise that person up and walk him to the outside of your garden? How are you going to do that? Do you think doing one more planting, one more flower, doing one more good deed is going to raise that dead body? But my good man, that's what you're going to have to do. Is raise that dead person, which is your soul and your spirit, and it's dead. And all the activities and the goodness you're doing on the outside is not doing the soul one bit of good. It still stinks. It's still defiled. It's still dead. And brother, you're going to have to give that thing life. Because that is what's going to have to go to the pearly gates. And that's what's going to have to stand before God and argue all your goodness. When your body dies, sir, it's that that's going to have to go before God. He's not going to transport you physically. He's going to take that. Can that plead your case? That's dead. And what that needs is life. Now, my good man, give it some life. In all honesty, people, can you get the picture? If the man shuts the door and walks outside in the garden, says, now I'm going to go over here. Here's a hungry person. I want to give him a meal today. People, you can't give a person a meal today and go out in the graveyard and raise dead. I mean, they're not connected. You can't do it that way. You can't raise dead people by doing good deeds. It never has been done. It never will be. Now, that's God's argument. Man keeps pointing his finger at the garden. Brethren, it's the dead man. That's the problem. When God said, I see none good and no, not one, he's looking at dead people. And they're defiled. And they're dead. But Adam was told by God, the day you eat thereof, you shall die. That very day, on the inside, Adam's soul and spirit went into died. Look, if you will, at 1 Timothy 5:6. Paul says, she that lives in pleasure, that is sin, she that lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. That sounds strange, doesn't it?
It's true.
She's got a dead person on the inside too, while on the outside, physically, she's alive. But that person inside the tomb's her. It's her. And what that person needs is life. And there's not a thing in the world she can do to give it life. Nothing. And that's the dilemma. That's the problem. You can buy health insurance. That takes care of the garden, doesn't it? It's where the bushes gets chopped down. You can even buy life insurance so when you're gone, your wife or husband or folks, they can take care of your garden for you. And you'll provide them a means so that they can take care of the flower gets chopped down. How about death insurance? Nobody sells that. Why? Because it's not available. You can't buy a policy that'll raise the old dead bones. Nobody has one. Because that's out of man's ability. It will take a miracle to raise the dead. If I went out to Forest Park Cemetery today and I walked out there and I said, "Arise from the grave," and somebody popped up, would you call that a miracle? I would. I'd probably be the one to die of fright, you know. But, I mean, I'd call it a miracle. I could take somebody out there and give them a meal today right in front of the grave and say, "Boy, I gave them a meal and I still rise. Rise, rise, rise." Yeah, guy gets fed and nobody's going to rise. It takes a miracle to raise the dead. I can't do it. I may be good gardener, but I can't do that. I can't raise the dead. What did Jesus say he was? "I am the resurrection and the life. Though a man be dead, he shall live. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man can come, no man in the dead tomb can come to the Father but through me." How can he do it? He's going to give life. The question the Father's concerned is not about all the garden activities, but what about the soul? And Jesus said, "I have the solution, fella. The good works are fine, but I want to give your soul life." So Jesus comes as man's what? Savior. What's he going to save? The garden? Nah. He's going to save the dead corpse in the tomb. And that dead corpse is already lost. It's already dead. Look at John 5:24. "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that hears my word and believes on him that sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into condemnation, but notice he is already passed from death unto life." I hope all of you have already been resurrected. I'm looking forward to a resurrection of my body, but I have already had a resurrection of my spirit. How about you? Jesus said, "You shall pass right now from death unto life right now if you accept and believe in me." And yet some folks say, "Oh, I don't need Jesus. I'm going to go out and do some more good works." Don't you understand planting more flowers of goodness can't raise the dead? Can't do it. and the person planting the flowers is the body, and the person that's dead that's going to judgment is the soul. It won't take a bunch of flowers up there. It's dead. There's no life. There's no chance. You want your dead old soul to represent you the minute you die before God? Is that what you want to represent you? He has no good works. He's dead. People can't get this to their skull. He's dead. He's already suffered the penalty of sin, death. He's dead. 1 John 5:12. 1 John 5:12. He that has the Son already has life. And he that does not have the Son does not even yet have life. I have physical life, but if I don't have the Son, I don't have spiritual life. And that's the argument God has with man. Man's arguing about the wrong thing. He's arguing about works, and God's arguing about death. And they're two different things. Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2. Verse 1 and 5. Paul talking to the Ephesians, he says, notice, you has he resurrected. He's talking this to people who haven't died physically yet. They ain't gone anywhere. He says to the congregation, you have Christ resurrected. You were dead in trespasses and in sins. Verse 5. Even when you were dead in sin, he resurrected us together with Christ. By grace are you saved. And just as a man can't raise his own dead body, he cannot raise his own dead soul. He can't. And I don't think there's a man alive today that can argue that he can raise the dead. He's already lost that argument 100%. There's no chance in the world he can raise the dead. So if he can't raise a dead body, how on earth is he ever going to raise a dead soul? He can't. The argument is over. And God has won this argument. There's nothing to argue. And if man thinks he can raise the dead, then try it. For his own soul's sake, brother, try it. Go out and raise something dead. And use your good works as the power. You try it. If it fails, brethren, you're in trouble. And man is in trouble. And is still arguing the wrong argument. But I'm good. And God says, man, that's not it. You're dead. You got a whitewashed sepulcher, but you're dead. And what you need is life. And you are defiled. Nothing is more defiled than the inside of a grave. Man is looking on the outside at his lovely products, and God's looking on the inside at the ugly stench. Man won't get his eyes off of his goodness, and God won't get his eyes off of man's death. What a delight. And people are dying and perishing forever, arguing the wrong thing. I pray that not be your case this morning.